Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Flimsy stands slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's armodillo.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo, built to last, designed to impress.
On DAB+, online, via the TalkSport app, and on your smart speaker.
The Women's Football Show.
With Leanne Sanderson.
Absolutely first class.
On TalkSport 2.
Hello and welcome to the Women's Football Show podcast. Every week I'll be here bringing you the best bits from the show and our exclusive content. This week I was joined by Arsenal, Chelsea, Watford player and Wales international Helen Ward, and we look back on her amazing career. Helen, how are you doing? And thank you for joining me.
I'm really good, thank you. Really good to be with you, and thanks for having me on.
No worries. Now, we've played against each other a number of times throughout the year. We haven't played with each other, but I know one of my best mates, Sophie Perry, speaks really highly of you, as do a lot of people. I want to take you back to the beginning of your career, because your kind of career came full circle. Started at Watford, now you're back at Watford as a GM, and we'll come on to that a little bit later. What was it about Watford that kind of keeps you coming back? Started at the club at 9 years old, you know, went on to captain the team. What was it about Watford that kind of keeps you tied to that club?
I don't know. I suppose growing up in the area, obviously, it was my local team. And while all my friends were supporting big Premier League sides, your Arsenals, your Chelsea's, your Man United's, I got taken along by my brother to a Watford game, and that was it. I was hooked. It's obviously a family club, and I just enjoyed some of the best years of my career, you know, both as a kid, right from, like you said, back at 9 years old. I think I got chucked into the A team, as it was, in the under 10, scored a hat trick on my first game, and that was it. I just always felt loved by the club. And when I left the first time round, it was always in the back of my mind that it would be nice to go back. And there got a point where I thought it's not going to happen. And yeah, I think it was when I fell pregnant with Charlie. I needed to be closer to home. And yeah, that was it. I came back and finished my career there.
Yeah, I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, having kids whilst playing, because it's a big topic of conversation. But firstly, you know, I want to talk about these big moves you've had in your career, Arsenal, Chelsea. How did they come about? And like, what did you learn from those experiences?
Yeah, so the first one, moving to Arsenal, I think I was 21, 22. Actually signed on New Year's Day of 2009, which was a bit mad. I think I probably had a few drinks the night before, which you wouldn't get away with these days. But yeah, it was in the days where you had to put in a 7-day approach for players rather than, you know, just signing people and paying for them. I didn't have a contract at Watford or anything like that. And I think I'd heard that Leeds, who obviously are a great side back then, were interested. I think Chelsea were too, but they hadn't hit the heights that they recently have. And that, when those two came in, I thought, no, I can't move away. I couldn't have moved up to Leeds anyway. That was unrealistic. And then Arsenal came in. I was like, that changes the game a little bit, because, as you know, I think you'd only just recently left by that point, having won everything. It was only, I think, 18 months before that you did the quadruple. And I thought, this is one of those moments where, although I was happy at Watford, I was the captain, I loved it there. I was, you know, a big fish in a small pond, I suppose. But we were in the top league. I was doing okay. But I knew that if I didn't give it a go, I'd regret it. I had to go. It was the best team in the country. And to then go and play alongside some of the players in that squad was incredible for me. So, yeah, it was out of the blue. But it was one that I had to give it a go.
And obviously, I've had a lot of goal scorers on my show. Not that I'm being biased to centre forwards or anything. Judy Fleet and Marianne Spacey yourself. And I spoke to Fleet about the art of being, you know, the number nine, the out-and-out goal scorer that I think is kind of disappearing from the game. Men and women's game, I think, is disappearing. Was scoring goals something that you always had a knack for? Was it something you worked on when you were younger? Like, how did you get so good at scoring goals?
Yeah, I think it was just one of those things, an instinct. You know, you get a lot of people say, oh, yeah, you just find yourself in the right place at the right time. It's luck. But I'd like to give myself and others like Fleets a bit more credit than that, that it is something that I don't think you can teach or coach. And I'm lucky to have had that. But I think now, like you said, it's a dying art. Too many players want to get involved and be this sort of number 10 position. No one wants to just hang around in the box. I was quite happy in there.
That was me.
If I had six touches a game and two of them ended in the back of the net, I'm not worried. I don't need to have this many passes or involvements. I'm happy just taking all the glory, I suppose, if I'm honest.
That's interesting, because in that number nine role, like, I played that for Arsenal, and then it wasn't until I moved to America and England, that wasn't until I moved to America that I played in the 10. And it's funny you should say that, because I think it takes a certain type of player, because I always needed to be on the ball. Some coaches loved it. Some coaches used to say, like, Leanne, stay higher. But I just felt like if I didn't touch the ball early on in the game, even if it was just a simple touch, I felt like my confidence wasn't there. But then as the centre forward, you know, Fleets could go 85 minutes and not touch the ball, bang one in the 90th and be the hero. And that's what makes her and you guys some of the best, you know. And I scored a lot of goals, but I feel like it wasn't something that it was instinctive in me. I felt like it was something that kind of like happened because of my football brain. So I think, you know, don't sell yourself short too much. Fleets did the same thing where it was almost like, oh, yeah, it's a little bit of luck. You know, no, finding yourselves in an 18-yard box and putting it in the back of the net, you know. And talking of luck, I mean, it's not lucky that, you know, you've been Wales's all-time goal scorer, you know, 44 goals in 99 games. Correct me if I'm wrong. That must feel amazing, you know, being Wales's all-time leading goal scorer.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I think you said you spoke to Jess Fishlock earlier in the week and she's creeping up on my record, but it's something I'm really proud of. And again, I was probably, it wasn't something I aimed to do, to become the top goal scorer. And I actually didn't know when I'd broken the record. I was just happy going about my business. I think it was good that I'd scored on my debut. I think I had two in the first three games that I played for Wales. And then fortunately just kept getting, you know, when you got someone like Jess behind you, putting it on a plate later on, Sophie Ingle as well, it made my job easy. But it wasn't something I sort of kept a note of until probably later down the line. And I thought, well, how much can I extend the record by? But I honestly didn't know when I'd broken the women's or the men's goal scoring record until probably a few years later. And it was like, oh, actually, that was the game that it happened. But I preferred it that way because there was no pressure on it. But it's something I'll always be proud of, that whatever happens now, Jess is inevitably going to catch me, and absolutely she deserves it. But I can always say that when I retired, I was my country's all-time leading goal scorer. And there's not many people that are lucky enough to say that. So yeah, it's something I'm really proud of.
Yeah, it's amazing. What a fantastic achievement. I want to take you back to when you first, you know, you were in England under 23 and you were playing in England. And we've seen this happen recently. It's happened when we were younger, but more recently, you know, people going on to play for other nations when they have dual citizenship and those types of things. How did that come about? The fact that you were, you know, in the England youth setup and then you kind of transitioned into playing for Wales. And what an amazing decision that was, because look what you went on to do.
Yeah, it's probably one of the best decisions I've made, to be honest. But yeah, I'd scored a lot of goals in, you know, for Watford. And I think it was Sian Williams, who you'll know from your time at Arsenal as well. She was my coach at Watford at the time. And she was sort of nagging people saying, look, I've got this kid that's scoring all these goals. And I think the season that I got a call up, I think I'd scored something like 40 goals in the Southern Division to help us get promoted. So I think it was Brent Hills was in charge, and I think he was maybe forced into choosing me at the time. And this isn't me like having a go at anyone here, but I think it wasn't necessarily his choice. I wasn't a big club, I wasn't a big name. And I just never felt like I fitted in. It didn't suit me how I wanted to play or me as a person for whatever reason. I just didn't ever feel settled. And, you know, any footballer will tell you that you play your best football when you're happy and when you're not comfortable. And, you know, I'm not saying don't ever go out of your comfort zone, but I just didn't think it got the best out of me for whatever reason. It was no one's fault. It was just a timing probably more than anything. And then Sean's assistant, Carl, he was the assistant for Wales. And he jokingly said to me once, have you got any Welsh in you? I said, yeah, my grandparents are Welsh. He said, what do you think? I was like, don't know, I've never really considered it. And a teammate of mine, Sally Wade, was playing for Wales at the time, and she said, honestly, mate, you've got to do it. Like, it's the best group of people. She said, we've just, and the thing that sold it for me was they'd just played Germany away. And it was the goalkeeper who was the captain. It was her last game. They had a sellout crowd. And she said, honestly, it was unbelievable. Jess Fishlock was clapping when they'd won a corner, clapping the crowd. And she said, but the night out afterwards was insane. I was like, right, I'm in, I'm done. And yeah, that was it. I made the decision and it was the best thing I've ever done, you know, probably on or off the pitch. It was the best decision I made. And yeah, I'm so grateful for it.
It's funny you should say that, Helen, because I think a lot of us that are around the same age find it quite relatable, because growing up in the younger England national teams, everyone felt restricted. Most of my teammates felt restricted. So I don't think it's a criticism of anybody. I think it's just the generation we grew up in and the type of coaches they had there, as opposed to now. Serena Wiegman, those types of expansive types of coaches that allow that type of freedom. Because honestly, all of us felt the same growing up in that situation. Now, my last question I want to talk to you about, being a mum, which is the most beautiful thing, you know, managing that whilst playing. I want to talk about that journey, how much support you have, because obviously in recently, there's a lot more support now than there ever has been before. But what was that journey like for you? You've had two kids while she was still playing.
Yeah, it was difficult. I'm not going to sugarcoat it, but I'm so glad I did it. And I'm so glad that I had the last 9 years of my career as a mum. And it's something, again, I'm really proud of. Yes, there wasn't anything in place in terms of maternity pay, maternity rights, all that kind of stuff. That wasn't really a thing. And, you know, I'd played with Katie Chapman, who'd obviously, she was like the GOAT in terms of mums playing football, like incredible how brilliantly she came back after her free. And I thought, you know what, I want to have a family. The time's right. Had to sort of forget about my football career for a minute and, you know, put that to one side and think, this is what I want as a person and, you know, in my relationship. But we'll talk about football after, kind of thing. It was difficult because I actually got released from a club because they'd heard that I wanted to have a family, which was a bit bizarre. And I was like, do you know what? It's cool. Like, it was true, but I wasn't pregnant at that point and I didn't know if I could be. You know, there's all these, you know, not everybody's lucky enough to be able to have kids. So I kind of thought, okay, whatever. But a year later, I did fall pregnant. I was at Reading. I'd just signed for them under Jane Ludlow. But it was that time, that weird time when they'd come out of the National League and had almost a year to go to play in the what it used to be the Summer League. And just before the start of the season, I had to tell Jane, and you'll know as well as anyone, telling Jane any bad news or any news that you're not sure was quite scary. And she sort of gave me a hug. She said, I really hate you right now, but I'm so happy for you. But she was great. She gave me all the support I needed, and Reading as a club did as well. So I had Emily, came back, managed to get myself back into the squad and back into the Wales fold. By that time, Jane had taken over as Wales manager. And again, really fortunate that she sort of, those first few camps allowed me to come for 2 or 3 days rather than the whole thing and find my feet again, and offer support, you know, in terms of childcare and stuff. I actually brought Emily on camp a couple of times, which was really special. So it was difficult, and I think everybody thinks of the physical side of it. Obviously, having a kid isn't easy. It takes a lot out of you, and the sort of the rehab process, I suppose, is quite tough. But I found the hardest bit was mentally. The guilt of leaving your kids with someone else, the guilt of other people having to find the time for me to go off. I felt like, you know, I'm swanning off to play football. And also that sort of doubt of, will I be the same player? Am I, you know, I relied on my pace quite a lot as a youngster, and was I going to get that back? Was I going to be as good? And all those sorts of things go around your mind. And I think that's probably what most mums would say they need the most support on, is the psychological side of things. And hopefully now, with things that have changed, I think there's a lot more awareness around it and there's a lot more support. And fingers crossed that's you know, all going in the right direction.
The WSL title has been turned upside down more than once over the past week. We heard from TalkSport's Uma Gourav to find out what the last round of results could mean.
They thought it was all over. But if we've learned anything in the 12 years of Emma Hayes' tenure at Chelsea, it's that you can never count the Blues out. The magic of the WSL continues to treat us in what is shaping up to be the most exciting title race we've seen for quite some time. Chelsea's thrilling 4-3 defeat to Liverpool midweek had handed the advantage to Man City. Even Hayes herself had conceded defeat. But while Arsenal may be out of the title race, they may just have dealt the decisive blow. Their late 2-1 comeback win over Man City opened the door to Chelsea again, and the Blues did not need asking twice. They put no less than 8 goals past the already relegated Bristol City in a ruthless and defiant performance which surely hands them the edge. A fine farewell to Hayes, to Fran Kirby and to Maren Mjelde in their final home game. And it's not just the title race that has been upset this weekend. Take a bow, Liverpool. Their 1-0 victory over Man United means they vault the Red Devils into fourth spot. It means the final top four could see a new team within it for the first time since 2019. Elsewhere, a frustrating 2-2 draw for Tottenham and Everton, but the point does guarantee Spurs will finish in the top half of the table this season. Meanwhile, as Carla Ward announces her departure from Aston Villa at the end of the season, the club reward her with a 1-0 win over Brighton. And the points were shared in a 1-1 draw between West Ham and Leicester, meaning that the Foxes have now not won a WSL game in their last 7. The twists and the turns are coming thick and fast now, as defending champions Chelsea prove just why they are so dominant. A blow for Man City, but though they're down, they're certainly not out. This WSL title race is not over yet, so turn away at your peril.
So, Helen, your former team, my former team, although I was only there for about a year before I went to America, crazy week, you know, losing to Liverpool. Emma Hayes did that interview after the game, kind of accepting his, to a certain degree, defeat with Aggie Beaver-Jones. What did you make of this week for Chelsea?
Yeah, it was wild, wasn't it? I mean, I think Emma knew exactly what she was doing with that interview. She was taking all the pressure off of her players. Of course, it did look almost like it was done, but I think, knowing Emma as I do, there's no way she's thrown in the towel that easily. So I think they're a little bit of mind games, but wow, what an incredible turnaround. Man City were virtually, 4 or 5 minutes away from basically having the title in their hands. And then, yeah, crazy couple of minutes. Arsenal turned it all around, and to top it all off, Chelsea go and spank Bristol City by 8. So it couldn't have gone any better as a Chelsea supporter. But yeah, crazy, crazy week.
I think as well, like when players and managers do interviews after a game, people have to realise it's hard to manage your emotions sometimes. Because I agree with you, Emma Hayes does play a lot of psychological, like mind games. She's a good talker. But I think if you're looking at it from a football perspective, I think a lot of people thought it was over. And it's true, sometimes you don't see the coaches saying those things outwardly. And to see Emma Hayes say that, I think everybody thought, well, that's a bit weird, because they've, you know, Arsenal still got to play City. I want to talk a little bit about Man City a second. I mean, I've been quite critical of Gareth Taylor in recent years because I just don't think they've reached the levels that they should have. I think they should have been in the Champions League. They should be in Champions League finals with the budget that they have. Easier said than done. And, you know, Emma Hayes is a massive pull with players coming to Chelsea, but surely Gareth Taylor will be so disappointed losing in the way they were 1-0 up. You know, there was 5 minutes to go. And then Stina Black-Sinius was like, no, I'm not having this. We're going to, like, you know, throw a lifeline out there to Chelsea. What did you make of that game?
Yeah, it was mad. I mean, for all of, like, the majority of the first half, I thought Man City were well on top. I missed the beginning of the second half. Then we talk about poachers and goal scorers. They were two poachers finishes, weren't they, from Black-Stenius at the end. Real sort of instinctive finishes, so credit to her. But yeah, Gareth Taylor will be utterly disappointed. I know they've lost Bunny Shaw for the rest of the season, and that will hurt, but they had enough and they should have done enough to put the game to bed, really. But it's a funny sort of twist with Jonas Eidevall helping out his old mate Emma Hayes, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm sure he loves that. Obviously, it's still technically advantage to City after they lost to Arsenal, but the goal difference, Chelsea putting 8 past Bristol. I mean, I felt sorry for Bristol at times this year, but this whole goal difference thing has now made it even crazier, because we're not really seeing high-scoring games in the WSL anymore, thankfully. So I think in the women's game, people always have something to say, and I feel quite protective of when there are high-scoring games. In the men's game, when they're high-scoring, no one really has anything to say. So what did you make of that game? 8-0, I mean, crazy, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's been really tough for Bristol. They've got such a young squad, and they've got a lot of talent in there. And at times this season, they have gone toe-to-toe, but I think they've run out of a little bit of steam. And Lauren Smith said at the end, they just ran out of ideas as well. And when you come up against a side that have nothing to lose and the firepower that Chelsea have, they were on a hiding to nothing. And once you've gone sort of 2-3-4, you can't stop it. Once a team gets in that sort of flow, and a player like Guru Wrighton, who obviously scored 4, the occasion of it all being Fran Kirby, Maren Mjelde, and of course Emma Hayes' last home game, it was just too much for Bristol City, and their players will take a lot from this season. It will feel really difficult at the moment, but they'll learn a lot from it, and it will hopefully stand them in good stead for the future. But it's been a real tough ride for them, but hopefully we'll see them bounce back next year.
Now, very own Joe Shannon spoke to Chelsea boss Emma Hayes after the game.
Emma, thanks for talking to us as always. You've had so many great memories on this ground. Is this one of the best nights?
Yeah, I think so. You can't write Chelsea off. That's what Millie Bright said. Can't write us off. And if you'd have asked me at the beginning of the day if Arsenal would score with 2 minutes within the 90 and then a winner and then we'd win 8-0, I'd say, what are the odds of that? So the odds were slim, for sure. But that's what we've built. We've built the ability to go again, even in disappointment. And do you know what? If I leave with nothing else for the rest of the year, I leave knowing that will remain.
A few days is a long time in football. Yeah. Have you been through just about every emotion this week, pretty much, from Wednesday onwards?
I mean, it's exhausting, our schedule. Someone told me we had 13 consecutive Wednesday games and Man City have had 2 all season. If you do that when you're in our position, it's a lot. It really is. Don't have the luxury of a game a week. We've had to play a game on Wednesday 2 days after getting knocked out of the Champions League. Like, it's a mental effort. It's not always physical. It's just the brain tires. And I felt that showed in the performance away to Liverpool, even though Liverpool, you know, are on a great run. But we're still there.
And it's one thing for Man City to lose, but for them to go and put on a performance like that, that tells you all you need to know, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was spectacular. Second half was spectacular and was relentless in the approach to it, and we were clinical, and I'm not surprised, but I'm surprised, if that makes any sense, because they taught me something today, the players. They taught me a lot about the things I've spoken about for years. It wasn't me speaking them, it was them demonstrating them, and that is, I think, a memory that will live with me forever.
Would it be fitting to go on and win it now?
Well, I don't know about that. I'm still trying to recover from what I've just experienced. But these players have taught me a lot today about the things I preach. But for once, it wasn't me that was driving that. It was absolutely them.
So, Helen, with Chelsea having a game in hand, they'll feel like it's in their hands with the opportunity to score more goals. Of course, they have to win those remaining games before even thinking about the goal difference. Chelsea face Spurs and Man United on the last day, and City face Villa on the last day. A lot to take in, a lot to process. How do you see it finishing out?
I think it's going to be really tight because they're not easy games. I know Aston Villa haven't had the best season, and you would like to think that Man City will go there and get what they need from that game, but not necessarily high scoring, which of course at the minute they need to score goals because Chelsea have got 2 games to add to their tally should they win. But Tottenham have had a really good season when you compare it to last year. They're in a FA Cup final as well. Are they taking their eye off the league a little bit? Does that play into Chelsea's hands? I don't know. Then going to Old Trafford on the last day, Manchester United would love nothing more than to spoil the party. And, you know, it's going to be a big occasion for them. They've had a really disappointing season themselves. Again, going to be in the FA Cup final too. So it's so hard to predict, which I think is brilliant. I think that's what the WSL needs, but that we don't know at this stage who's going to win it, because so often it's been one side's run away with it a bit. So it's going to be exciting for the neutral, and I can't wait to see how it all pans out.
Yeah, it reminds me, this has happened a couple of times a few years ago with Chelsea and Man City, and it went down to the final days. I think a lot of people just thought City had it wrapped up, but you can never write this Chelsea team off. Now, the best of the rest, you know, because I always said it's almost like a mini Super League within the Super League, because those top 4 teams, you know, yes, you might get like a bit of a lucky break sometimes. A Tottenham might beat, you know, a City, and it's not luck, but you know what I'm saying. Liverpool, Matt Beards, you know, he was my coach at Chelsea when I was there. He's doing an amazing job in his second tenure at the club, you know, in the space of a week. Manchester United beating Chelsea. They seem to be Chelsea's bogey side, because when Liverpool got promoted last season, they beat them in the first game of the season. What do you make of what Matt Beard has done this season at Liverpool? And do you think they kind of can creep into that top 4, similarly to how kind of Aston Villa were in and around it last year?
Yeah, I mean, they're in pole position now after the result against United yesterday. And I think, like you, I played with under Matt Beard at Chelsea, and I've got a lot of time for the guy. He knows how to manage his players. and he's getting the best out of them. They've got a good squad, don't get me wrong, but he's signed some really good players, some experienced players, bringing Gemma Bonner back to the club a couple of years ago. That sort of signing has really helped them, and they've gone from strength to strength this year, you have to say, and they got them promoted from the Championship, sort of held their own just about the season after, and then this season they've kicked on superbly. And yeah, I'd like to see them break into that top four and break the mould a bit. And a club the size of Liverpool should be doing that. So, you know, that's not to say that it's been easy for him. But yeah, it'd be really interesting. I think they'll finish the season strong, and then it's how they can kick on, because as we've seen with Aston Villa, it's not quite so easy. It's easy doing it once, but then following up with that is the tough one.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
History will be made this week in the FA Cup finals. Manchester United and Spurs go head-to-head at Wembley to win their first major silverware, and we're bringing the match live on TalkSport 2. Helen and I looked ahead to just what we can expect from that huge game. Helen, I mean, for the neutral, right, it's quite a unique situation to not find an Arsenal, a City or a Chelsea in the final. Let's start with Manchester United. Slightly indifferent season. I know at the beginning of the season, their fans were kind of coming after Mark Skinner a little bit. And I think he's taken the heat off a little bit. Now, two back-to-back finals for Manchester United. What have you made of them this season?
Yeah, it's been tough for them. I think you sort of look at them and I never really felt they've hit any sort of run of form. They might get one result, maybe two, and then they drop off again. So I think to have an FA Cup final at the end of it is credit to the team that they've ploughed on and they've got themselves through, and obviously a difficult semi-final to beat Chelsea. And I think that's something that they've really struggled with in the last few years, is they've come close on so many occasions, including the FA Cup final last year. I think for them to actually do it and get the result, get themselves to a final, which probably you'd say they're just about favourites for, is credit to the team, where it could easily have fallen away. The season hasn't gone to plan. Players could easily have sort of dropped off a little bit. But to keep themselves in the hunt for a trophy, I think you would consider is probably a successful season, should they
go. Yeah, sorry, Helen. Yeah, Manchester United have had the better season when it comes down to the league. But that kind of goes out the window, doesn't it? I always think when you play in FA Cup finals, we both have, and played in finals, it's just getting there, isn't it? You know, when you get there, anything can happen, because I don't think league form really comes into it. And Tottenham will be just buzzing to be there, won't they?
Yeah, 100%. And especially, like you said, when it's two teams, I mean, they're close in the table anyway. But also there's not that sort of out-and-out favourite like there normally is with a Chelsea or an Arsenal. Usually you've got the big dog and then someone trying to come and take the title away from them. But where it's two, obviously United have got the experience of last season. But in terms of winning trophies, this is new for both of them. And that makes it even more exciting. And both sides will think they've got every chance of going and lifting that trophy, because on the day, anything can happen. You turn up, you have a couple of lucky moments, or, you know, a piece of worldly skill worldy goal, that kind of thing. So both sides, both sets of fans will be really up for this, and it should be a brilliant atmosphere down at Wembley.
Yeah, and as for Spurs, I mean, Robert Villaham, what have you made of how good he's done in a short space of time? Because obviously it wasn't long ago that Tottenham were getting just battered by Arsenal. I remember that first time they played there at the Emirates after coming up. Then this year they beat Arsenal for the first time. You know, they beat City in the quarterfinal of the FA Cup. What have you made of what Robert Villaham has done this year?
Yeah, he's been brilliant. You think of they were in relegation trouble last season. So to turn it around that much and in such a short space of time is all credit to him and his staff and the players as well. They've really stepped up, and there are some players in there that have come through all the leagues with them as well. And you sometimes forget that the likes of Ashley Neville, Jess Naz, even they've been down when Spurs were, you know, in tier three. So it's credit to them. But I love the fact that all these sides are having these big moments of beating Arsenal for the first time. And although we're seeing the top sides, generally speaking, come out at the top at the end of the season, having those moments within the league and within the season to turn over the big sides, gradually that momentum will change, and you'll start to see a much tighter league right throughout. And that's what everybody wants. You don't want it to have those sort of league within a league. You want it to all be competitive. When it's only a 12-team league, you need it to be as competitive as possible. And that's what we're starting to see now.
One player that we all felt for as soon as we knew that Tottenham were playing Manchester United was Grace Clinton. Obviously, he's on loan from Manchester United, so she can't play in that game. One of Tottenham's most influential players this year, no doubt, will go back to Manchester United at the end of the season. How do you feel for her, Helen? Because I honestly feel for her so much.
I do. I think he's so sad, and I feel for Spurs as well, because she's been so important to them, as you said, and you know she's earned her England debut off the back of this season as well. And to have that moment, I'm sure she'll have plenty more to come, but that's not, you know, at this point she'll be feeling so sad for herself. She would have been desperate for Chelsea to have won that semi-final against Manchester United in a funny sort of way. I mean, in my opinion, she should be guaranteed a medal, and whoever wins it, she should get one, because her performances have been superb this year, and I've really enjoyed right from the start. I think I did radio for one of the games right at the start of the season, and she stood out for me even at that early on in her Spurs career. So I think she's got a bright, bright future ahead of her, and she will have many more opportunities, I'm sure. But she'll be really, really sad that, you know, when it comes to it, and she's not walking out with her team, because she's played such a big part in them getting there.
Yeah, and a sold-out Wembley is going to be. How do the players like manage their emotions on that day and not let the occasion get the better of them, do you think?
Yes, it's tough. I think, obviously, you look at the internationals, the top internationals in the sides who have played in those big games with big crowds, particularly those that played for England in the Euros, the likes of Ella Toon, Mary Earps, they'll be used to that sort of environment. And that may be what is the difference, is you look at how many of the players have had that big game experience, and maybe that's what's going to tell. But I think the biggest thing is to enjoy it. It's what we've all wanted, games and big moments at Wembley, full stadiums, all that kind of stuff. I think it's where the game needs to be. And I think you've just got to try and take it all in your stride as best you can. Enjoy the occasion, but don't let it get on top of you.
And Robert Villaham has a bit of a headache team selection wise. It's something, you know, he's got all the players available. Martha Thomas didn't start the semi-final, but scored the winning goal. Would you start, I have a feeling what I know your answer will be, because my answer is the same, Bethany England and Martha Thomas together?
I think it gives you the best chance of goals, so why not? You're taking Grace Clinton out. I know they're not the same position, but it's opening up a spot in his team, because she would start most games, if not all of them. So, yeah, it's an FA Cup final. Of course, you can't go gung-ho and be silly, but the goals that Martha Thomas is capable of scoring, I'm a really big fan of her. I have been for a long time. I think she offers an awful lot as a striker. And she took her goal in the semi-final really well. So, yeah, I'd do it. I'd start them both. Why not?
Yeah, me too. Especially Martha Thomas going against her former team. I think as well, so I want to bring us back to just quickly, because we don't see many managers playing two kind of number nines anymore, do we? But yesterday, Arsenal did the same thing. Alessia Russo and Stina Blackstenius ended up on the field of play. But I think maybe we're biased, Helen, because we're both centre-forward, so we always want to be on the pitch.
Exactly. I think it is. The more strikers on the pitch, the more goals you're going to score, and the more entertaining it is. So why not?
Yeah. What's your predictions for this game?
Oh, I think it's going to be tight. I think Manchester United might just edge it, just because of that experience of last season. I'm going to go 2-1 Man United, but it's going to be really close. It could go all the way to penalties, but I'm going to say 2-1 Man U.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think it'll be a massive day for Tottenham. Just the fact that they're there is fantastic. But that goes out the window. As soon as you go over that white line, it's not going to be like, oh, we're happy to be here. So I think we'll have to have a look back on your predictions next week. End of the final, we also caught up with some of the players hoping to make an impact on that game, starting with Manchester United's Aoife Mannion, who sat down with TalkSport's Bradley Hayden.
It gives us so much motivation, but also with it being our second time being there as a team, some of the nerves of being somewhere for the first time as a team hopefully won't be there as much. Now, until we walk out on Wembley, no one's going to be able to know exactly what they're going to be feeling, but I hope that that experience from last year will stand us in good stead. And, you know, when you get to an FA Cup final as a team for the first time, you always say, you know, you're going to play the game, not the occasion, but undeniably there's nerves. And it can feel very overwhelming, and that can sometimes derail a performance or make you slightly hesitant. And we're hoping that that won't be the case for us this year. We've had that experience, we've got that experience under our belt, and all that's left for us to do is put in an incredible performance. Who knows whether, you know, we'll have to dig on different things like being really resilient and gritty in the game, or whether we might be able to get some good possession. And wow, I can't believe that. Well, I can believe, but it feels special to say that that is an opportunity and a chance and a position that we're in.
Bradley and Uma also spoke to Charlotte Grant and Rosella Ayan of Spurs as part of the Tottenham Hotspurs Her Journey themed evening with Toomey ahead of the weekend.
Yeah, it's so exciting. You know, we're trying not to look too far ahead because we've still got some games beforehand, but it's a dream come true for all of us players to play at Wembley and for a lot of us first time. So we're really looking forward to the game and hopefully we can get a good result.
It's already sold out, which is super exciting. What are you expecting from Man United in the final?
I think Man United are a very competitive team. You know, we saw that on the weekend with the 2-2 draw. They're going to come out tough and be really, you know, press higher and be really creative in the final third. But I think it was really good for us to play against them to then be prepared for those situations when it comes to Wembley.
And I've got to ask you about the manager as well, because he's been here for a little under a year now.
Yeah.
But what is he like to work with, and what has he changed in such a short space of time compared to where Tottenham were at the end of last season?
I think he really believes in his style of play, and he's very positive, and, you know, he's really made us play a brand of football that I think everyone can see what we're trying to do now, and I think it's very clear how we play. And, you know, as I said, he's always super positive and he enhances what he wants, and everyone's kind of on board with it. So he's brought a real positivity to the group, I'd say.
And what are his main strengths, would you say?
I think he's positive, you know, as I just said. I think he knows what he wants in how he wants to play football with his attacking style, and he makes it clear what he wants defensively, so in that way. And he's also very relaxed. You know, he came in and you could just tell with his aura that he was a chilled guy, and, you know, I think that's positive for us and the players that we have in our team.
I've got to ask you about Grace Clinton as well. Unfortunately, she can't play in the final at Wembley, but how impressed have you been by her performances this season, and what is it that makes her so good?
To be completely honest, I didn't actually know Grace before she came to the club, but she's obviously made a real name for herself this season, and I'm really happy for her because off the pitch she's honestly lovely, and, you know, I think we're going to miss her at Wembley, of course we are, but she knows how much she's done for us getting us to that point. And I just hope she can keep on doing what she's doing, because she's probably had one of the best seasons of players in the WSL at her age. And yeah, I'm just really happy for her, and I can't wait to see her push on, and, you know, she's been great for us.
Now, Helen, there's a lot going on in women's football this week, as always. And just before I let you go, I wanted to get your thoughts and views on the past weekend's news. Something that kind of I thought was a weird one for me: Carla Ward set to leave Aston Villa at the end of the season after having 1 year left on her contract. What did you make of that?
Yeah, it really came out of the blue. I couldn't believe when that popped up on my phone the other day. I mean, she'd sort of hinted, I listened to something she said about being a mother in football, and she said how it's unsustainable, but I didn't think she meant sort of right now. I thought she meant sort of she wouldn't be able to do it for sort of 10, 15 years, but whether that means that she's not going to step into a management role like from now, or if she's just the time at Villa's come to an end and she's looking for something different to management, or whether it's another managerial role, I don't know, but really came out of the blue and took me by surprise. And I think it's a real shame because she'd done so well with them last season. I know this season's been a bit more tricky, but I certainly felt that she had a little bit more to give with that side. So, yeah, interesting to see what she does next.
Yeah, it was a weird one because I think she's done a really good job at Villa, but I think we have to keep managers like Carla Ward in football, because obviously my next question to you is about female managers, you know, in the WSL. At the beginning of the season, all the managers that were women have been sacked or relegated or be leaving at the end of the season. Do you think we have a problem within the WSL with that? And I don't think it's necessary. I always believe the best person for the job, that has to be said, right? I'm not saying there needs to be female. I believe you should have male referees as well, the best person, right? But there has to be somewhat of a problem, because maybe it's not attracting the female managers to go into it. Maybe you can dig a little bit deeper in that with your experience being a GM now of Watford.
Yeah, my instinct sort of says that, and I agree with you, by the way, I think it's the best person for the job regardless. And the same comes to referees and head coaches. But I wonder if it's a generational sort of thing, and where we're seeing the growth of the game, and people like myself and you, we're of a generation where we've kind of only just come to the end of our careers to then look into that next step and haven't quite got that experience to then go and manage. And I think now, as the years go on with more players, we've seen Remy Allen step in at London City Lionesses and do a fantastic job. And you're going to get more players like that that have done their coaching badges earlier and are ready, once they finish playing, to step into coaching. Whereas before, it was kind of a bit of an afterthought, or we didn't have time to do the badges because we're working another job alongside playing. So I do think, and I hope, that as we progress and the game on the pitch and the playing is becoming that much better year in, year out, I think the coaching then will follow that. As people come out of the game from a playing perspective, they'll then get into the coaching. And, you know, my friend Elise Hughes at Crystal Palace, she's 22 years of age, she's on her A licence. So I think more players are doing that. And that's where I think we'll see it happen as the years go on. There'll be more and more women coming out of the game that are ready to step into the coaching roles.
Yeah, that's fascinating. 22 and on the A licence, that's fantastic. Thanks for that little bit of insight. Bunny Shaw, I have a feeling we both love her. I mean, I talk about her all the time on the show. I don't think she gets anywhere near as much love as she should. Finally got an award, Football Writers Association. What have you made of her year this year?
Yeah, incredible. Absolutely deserves that award. And I'm just gutted for her that she broke her foot when she was on the brink of breaking, I think, Viviana Miedema's single season goal scoring record. Because she would have deserved it. And I also think it would have gone a long way to helping Man City to win the title as well. I thought they'd done enough, but we'll have to wait and see. But I think from her, she's difficult to play against. She's unplayable at times. When she decides she's on it, you've got no chance. She's so strong, so powerful, but her technique, everything, she's got good feet. She brings others into play. She's an all-round centre-forward, and she knows where the back of the net is. And as we both know, that's the best thing in football. And, yeah, absolutely deserves a reward and should get a lot more credit. You're right.
Yeah, and obviously for Chelsea fans, I'm sure they're feeling it right now. Mara Mielda, Emma Hayes is even, but Frank Kirby set to leave Chelsea at the end of the season. What's your thoughts on that decision? I mean, I have an opinion that I think that I work a lot in the NWSL in America, and I think this league will suit Frank Kirby down to a T. So I'm thinking, like, Frank Kirby at this moment in time, fantastic player. This was 5 years ago. I think there'll be loads of, you know, deals on the table in Germany, France. I'm not saying they won't, because they will be. It's Frank Kirby. But what did you make of that decision, and where do you think we could end up seeing her play?
Yeah, I was thinking about this. I mean, I was lucky enough to share a pitch with her at Reading when she was just bursting onto the scene, and there was a goal she scored against Arsenal. I think she's spoken about it recently, where she spun a World Cup winning Japanese international, spun her around 360 and then took it on and scored past Emma Byrne. And that sort of set her on her way. And she's one of the best finishers I've seen and played with, but she's got obviously so much more to her game as well. Obviously, I think the injuries and her health problems have taken their toll in recent seasons. We haven't seen as much of her on the pitch as we'd like. And maybe that might play into where she ends up next. But as you said, I think there'll be plenty of offers both from within the UK and abroad. And yeah, I mean, I think for her as a lifestyle to go out and try in somewhere like the NWSL, I think would be really good for her. But I've got no idea. Again, it's another one that I wasn't necessarily expecting. Yeah, exciting to see where she ends up, because I think she's got a lot more to give, and she'll still want to be involved in that England squad. So I think it's important that she chooses the right place that can get the best out of her.
That's all for today. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next Monday when we'll have a new FA Cup winner and we'll find out whether Chelsea have managed to defeat Spurs in their penultimate WSL game.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.